Chapter 14. Bet. When I get back to my room after rehearsal, Eleanor's there in her flannel pajamas with her eyes closed, deep in one of her visualizations. I hear her chanting each movement of the Snow Queen variation. I slam the door hard to snap her out of it. It's Friday night, and I'm itching for some fun, but she's already in pajamas. As usual. I try not to be furious. Alec came by, she says, without any hint of irritation. She thinks we can talk about Alec like he's a movie star or my prom date, but what I have with him is so much bigger, so much more serious than any of that. Looked sad you weren't here. He said he texted you and waited an hour in the stairwell for the RA to leave the hall. A smile starts inside me, and turns itself outside. My heart squeezes, and I hope she's not just adding that looking sad bit to make me feel better. Alec and I haven't been right since the last time he was over here. It feels like it's been months. I squeeze my phone. Sometimes I don't answer his texts right away because I want him to know that I'm busy. I want him to wait a little. I want him to know that I am a serious ballerina. And life doesn't stop for him, even though it kind of does. Eleanor's phone starts to ring. She clicks it to silent. It starts up again. She tries to talk over the annoying pings. Who's that? No one ever calls her, unless it's me. Her mother's even too busy to call her with all her starving siblings. No one? Her face turns redder by the second. And her voice buzzes when she's nervous, and it's going crazy now, shaking and speeding up. Did you like Morky's new additions to the solo? She's moving away from, I don't care about rehearsal, I say, eyeing her. I push again about the phone call, and she won't tell me, so I change the subject. You tell Alec where I was? I didn't know where you were. Where were you? Who was calling you? I snap back. Eleanor sighs. My older brother. She's lying. She doesn't make eye contact, and her bottom lip does a little quiver. I know her too well. When did we start keeping secrets from each other? I can't let her know it bothers me, though. She'll need me soon. That's for sure. It's always that way. Anyway, Alec left you a note, she says. I am a crush-struck 12-year-old when she hands me the ripped sheet of notebook paper with Alec's familiar handwriting on it. My heart surges, the way it used to when we were 13 and just learning how to kiss each other. B. Coke Theater. I'll be on the steps. A. I tell Eleanor not to wait up and to cover for me if anyone checks, which they won't. As long as we're at rehearsal, at classes, and making weight, the teachers and RAs and nurse don't actually care what happens to us. Once or twice a semester, we take what Alec calls a field trip to the Coke Theater, late enough at night that the curtain has already fallen on whatever show is happening there, and the janitors will gladly take a few $100 to ignore us. Alec's got access. His parents are on the board of everything, and he has a way of learning security codes and passwords. It's just one more thing I like about him. Good guy, but still interesting. When I get to the theater entrance, he's there, in his red-striped scarf and gray wool peacoat. His eyes flutter across my face like he's really not looking at me. Hey, stranger, I say, resting my hand on his forearm, familiar and safe. Trying to warm things up. I'm thinking about Thanksgiving break looming and being alone in his room at home and making up for lost time. That big, plush king bed and his freshly washed sheets that always smell like lavender. Come on, it's cold, he says, not pulling me in for a hug or kiss. He taps in the right security code and we enter the backstage area. It's pitch black. So we search for lights by running our hands all over the walls. They startle on, or at least a few bulbs do. The stage is half lit, The auditorium is all dark, and Alec and I are alone at last. The wings are empty, and the curtains hold the familiar smell of velvet, of dust, of something I can't describe. Alec climbs onto the stage, does a few quick but precise jumps and turns, and then sits on the polished floor with a distinct lack of reverence. I approach the stage more carefully. It's my church. Even when I forget what it felt like to be a tiny dancer, the expansive and imposing stage makes me feel small and light and alive again. I lie on the floor and stare at the high ceiling and imagine myself in costume, perfecting the most complicated and intricate choreography Morky or Mr. K could possibly conjure. I want to sleep on stage and always feel the warmth under rows and rows of lights, twinkling like faraway stars. Usually, Alec and I would roll around a little, his hands in my hair, mine in his, the wood creaking under us and the lights warming us up even more. But today, all he does is frown down at me. I sit up. "I've kind of missed rehearsing with you," I say, widening my eyes. I try to lean my head on his shoulder, but he scoots away. "I love you, you know." He doesn't say it back, so I just let the words sit in the almost dark. They echo. We are too small and too uncertain for such a majestic space. Bet. My name sounds good in his mouth. Sweet. He barely hits the T at the end. "Mm-hmm." I make the sound as sleepy and sexy as I can. The hum vibrates, and my lips are stirred from the sensation. I want to kiss him desperately.
"Look, I brought you here," Alec says after a brief pause, "to tell you face to face that it's over."
I don't think I heard him right, but then he starts again.
"We can't be together anymore. We've always done this on-off thing. We just can't anymore."
Each word punches my chest. I shudder away from him, wondering if I'll ever take a full breath again. My eyes, my lungs, my heart all sting. "Over?" I start, knowing if I yell, the sound will be magnified and echoed back to me with terrible accuracy.
"You think that's it?"
I want to control my voice so badly, but my insides are pounding with emotion, and even my bones seem to be throbbing from the hurt.
"You're still one of my oldest friends."
"Friends?" I say. The word is way too little to fit the bigness of Alec and me inside it. I am so small on this huge stage. I want to be wrapped in a blanket and curled into a cozy space, not lost in the magnitude of the history here. It doesn't feel safe, and his words hit like bullets.
"It's just time. We've kind of been off for a while."
"Off?"
"It's just been weird this year. It's time." Even Will noticed. A white-hot hate for Will explodes in my chest.
"Will's in love with you!"
The words come out bitter and spiteful, and obviously I have lost focus. Because as much as I hate Will, I never wanted Alec to know that. The reason Will and I aren't friends, the betrayal of your best friend saying he's in love with your boyfriend and expecting you to sympathize, to be kind about it. He asked me to stop being so affectionate with Alec because it hurt him. It still makes my heart pound with anger. And now he's told Alec to break up with me. What else has he told him? What else will he tell Alec?
"What about Will?" Alec says with shock, as if he didn't hear the words, the truth. I don't repeat the words that changed everything between Will and me this summer.
"You heard me."
We sit in silence.
"I shouldn't have even brought him up," Alec says. "Please don't say stuff like that about Will, though, okay? He's my best friend. Aside from you. Let's just..." Let's forget this part of the conversation. His eyes look watery, like he might cry. Alec is too soft, Adele has always said. But it's part of what I love about him. The secret soft space that isn't too far below the surface. I need us to be okay, even though we're not the same us anymore, he says. It's just time, I think. But it will never be okay. It's broken, whatever we had. And things will never be the same. I don't let him walk me back to school. Instead, I go to Adele's, one avenue west of school. The cold freezes any tears welling up inside me, and I take two pills. I'll have to text my dealer for more after my mother gives me my weekly allowance. I'm running low. Adele's place is a decent doorman building with marble floors in the foyer and pretty fake plants. A lot of the dancers live here, usually together. It's nothing like the townhouse we grew up in, but Adele calls it cute. The doorman lets me in. He's seen enough of me, and probably way too much of my mother. I take the elevator up to the 7th floor. I knock light at first, then harder. She doesn't like unplanned visits. If we could schedule our phone calls and rehearse our chats, she'd be even happier. The door opens only a slit. Adele's sleepy blue eyes stare back at me. Her thick blonde hair falls around her shoulders perfectly, like she hasn't just gotten out of bed. Willowy white legs stand in flawless formation. Even just standing in the hallway in the middle of the night, she's a model of grace and the perfect ballerina. Bed? What is it? She doesn't move to the side to let me in. It's late. Everyone's sleeping. She lives with three other American ballet company members. Can I come in? I ask. It's only 11. And tomorrow's opening night for our Nutcracker season. Or did you forget? Her eyebrow lifts, and she leans forward just like our mother to inspect me. The fog of Alec's breakup and losing the sugar plum fairy is distracting me from things I'm supposed to know. I should have the company's opening nights and closing nights memorized if I want to be part of them one day. I should have remembered that she does 8 ballets a season as a soloist, so she's perpetually tired and distracted. Your pupils are all dilated. She reaches a hand for my locket before I can step back. Chill with these, okay? I pull away. Thought my pills were a secret. With what? You know what I'm talking about. I can tell. I've never been quite good at lying to my sister. Go back to the dorms. Take a hot shower until you're pink. Until you've gotten it together. Then call me. Tomorrow. She closes the door before I can say anything else. And there I am, alone again. The next day, Mr. K cuts rehearsal short. And if I was the kind of girl that sent thank you notes, I'd send him one. Being around Alec after the news he dropped on me is too much. So I choose to not deal with it. Instead, I focus on the glitter. It's all about the glitter. Red lips, eyes lined in purple, glitter on my cheeks, my shoulders, my collarbone, any part of me I want them to look at. Whoa, Eleanor says when she opens the door to our room. I haven't chosen a dress yet, so I'm mostly naked, except for heels and layers of makeup and my locket. Get your ass in gear. I'm dragging her out tonight for a little fun and distraction. It's Saturday, after all, and normal 16-year-olds in New York City would be out. Rehearsal sucked, huh? Eleanor says, stripping off her leotard and tights. Her hair is still in a bun, and I reach over to undo it myself. Alec joining us? I flinch, signaling to her that I don't want to talk about it. I haven't told her or Liz anything. I don't even want to picture his face. His smile full of pity while watching me dance the Snow Queen variation and not the Sugar Plum Fairy. The sound of his whistle after Gigi danced. It's probably for the best he won't hook up with me right now. I don't want someone looking at me like that when we're kissing, touching, having sex. I'll just wait until he wants me again. Until he sees I'm still better than everyone else. I think he's just confused about his feelings right now. Has to be. He's never danced a paw with anyone but me. I'll forgive him for not knowing what to do. And for us not having our usual amount of time together. Just me, you, and Liz tonight, I say, clipping the words. Alec was being too nice to Gigi, Eleanor starts. I even saw, we're not talking rehearsal anymore tonight. Or Alec. And most of all, Gigi, I order. Get your hair down and your boobs out. I'm a little giddy from coffee and pills and all the adrenaline of dancing for the last 5 hours. Eleanor pulls away from my hands in her hair. It's a mess of congealed hairspray and sweaty strands, and a shower of bobby pins rains from her scalp to the hardwood floor. We've been playing with each other's hair and helping each other in and out of costumes since we were little girls. There's really no distinction between her body and my own. Backstage, she'll help me pull my costumes on and off for quick changes, and I've always helped her perfect her makeup. You're cleaning those up. She gestures to the spilled bobby pins. Already, she's pushing her hair back into a less structured but still painfully tight ponytail. As she pulls it back, her eyebrows rise. Her face is too chubby. The whole thing makes her look fat. I'll clean them up while you get ready, I say. I'm tired, and so many parts of my body hurt. Do we have to go out? Eleanor says. But even as she whines, she grabs her towel and turns toward our private bathroom, because she knows I'm not taking no for an answer. And is our laundry back? She asks, like it's her housekeeper who washes, folds, and delivers our laundry to the front desk every 3 days. This is my last towel. Yeah, it came today. Your bag is in your closet. I riffle in the bright pink laundry bag on my bed. Found these, too. I dangle a pair of frilly black panties that are straight out of a lingerie store. They aren't mine. Are you hiding something from me, Elle? Her mouth drops open. She grabs at them and starts to stutter out a million reasons why she has something other than her usual cotton underwear. How it's nothing. How they were a gift. You want someone to see those, don't you? I say. She tries to change the subject. I should just go to bed. So tired. It's Saturday night. No Pilates tomorrow. We're going out. You can wear the silver dress. I take out the shiny mini dress I bought over the summer, the one she fell in love with, hanging it on the closet door for maximum effect. Eleanor walks up to the dress with religious reverence and touches the fabric. An hour later, it's hugging her body, and she doesn't even look like a ballerina anymore. Eleanor has always been like my own personal Barbie doll. Her mother never taught her all the little tricks of being a girl that my mother taught me, so she lets me take over in that department. When we were 12, the costume mistress, Madame Matvienko, pulled her aside and told her to get her act together, that she looked like a slob. She came to me, snotty and crying, asking for my help, and I've always been there for her since day one at the conservatory. Tonight, she lets me tease her ponytail and line her eyes in the darkest kohl. I purple her lips and drape 4 long, beaded necklaces over her neck. She's so tiny under all that makeup and shine and sparkling beads that she practically disappears. As my mother would say, the dress is wearing her. My dress is the color of my skin. Ivory white and off the shoulder. Green high heels. Nothing to hide. I knock on Liz's door and give it a little push. Ready? It's dark and smells like a mix of sweaty feet and leotards and vomit. Eleanor says she can't take it and stays in the hall. Liz is all wrapped up in blankets and not in the dress I told her to wear for tonight. Her roommate, Frankie, isn't in the bunk bed above her. Why aren't you ready? I say. And it smells terrible in here. It's too cold to go out, she says, looking up at me with hollowed eyes, wrapping herself tighter and clicking on her heating pad. You sick? I ask, not wanting to deal with the fact that this is all something else. The sudden weight loss. Well, not so sudden when you think about it, but I don't want to think about it at all. And she's been bragging to me about it, sending me little texts when she meets her goals. Yeah, she says. I'm so tired. I tell her that I'll bring her some tea. Stay in bed, okay? You need the night off. After delivering Liz's tea, Eleanor and I take the long route out of the building, down the elevator for a basement visit first. I avoid any talk about Liz. I can't add another bad thing to think about to the growing pile in my head. Can't we just go straight outside? Eleanor complains, already limping in my expensive heels. She tugs at my $500 dress. We do this every time. This is the best part, I say. And I need it, okay? The co-ed student lounge is full. Some watch TV. Henri and a few boys play pool. Others play air hockey. And Alex strums his guitar in the corner. Will spots me and sighs loudly, which gets Alex's attention. I blow Will a kiss. He used to go with me when I went out. It used to be all five of us. Alec, Liz, Will, Elle, and me. Out in a little pack. Now I can't stand the thought of him going anywhere with me. He frowns, looking the same as he did the first day I met him. New kid sobbing outside of the boys' ballet class after being caught by Mr. K in point shoes. I'd consoled him. That reality is so far away. I bump Henri's pool cue on purpose when I pass by. Pardon? He says, then steps so close to me I can smell the chocolate he must have just eaten. Move, I say. You're in my way. No. His eyes scan me from top to bottom. You stepped in my way. Made me miss my shot. Eleanor grabs my hand. Let's go, she says, trying to pull me away. I glance back at her, only to see if Alec is watching. And he is, his hand frozen on his guitar, which makes me happy. He still cares. I turn back to Henri. I put a hand on his chest and push a little. Are you going to make me stand here all night? Instead of irritation, I decide to flirt and add a smile, enjoying the whole thing. Would that be such a bad thing? He says, his lilt teasing. Or maybe you're going to invite me to go with you. Isn't that what girls like you do? He takes my hand from his chest and holds it, squeezing it a little until I snatch it away. I step forward, planning to walk through him. He's nothing. He's nobody here. Dancing a paw with me will make him something. You don't know anything about me or this place, I say, loud enough for everyone to hear. I've seen your type before. Plenty of you at Perry Opera, he says. Yes, you're nothing special. In fact, I know all about you. He leans close to my ear. Especially what you did to Cassandra. Pretending to be her friend? I snap back and feel my cheeks redden. I give him a look that screams, "You don't know anything." I hope my face doesn't betray me, doesn't reveal that I know what he's talking about. Alec walks past us without even stopping, without even checking if I'm okay. I follow his back with my eyes, not understanding why he didn't stop to help. Even Eleanor shifts away from us, leaving me cornered by Henri.
I know a lot, Bet Abney. I know lots of things you probably wouldn't want me to know. And I plan to prove it, show everyone who you are.
He lets his fingers graze my collarbone.
Don't touch me, I say. Does he really know the things I did?
I can't seem to move.
He laughs. Your secrets are safe with me, he says.
Then he adds, well, maybe not. Eleanor bucks up, finally. She grabs my shaky hand and pulls me away from Henri. In a daze, I let her drag me all the way to the school's side door entrance. I don't even put my coat on before we step out into the cold November air.
What's wrong? Eleanor says.
But I ignore her, my thoughts haunted by Henri's accusation, by Cassie and what I did. I sink down to the stoop, my legs weak and wobbly. All I know is, if I'm going down for this, I won't be alone. We were all in on it together. Last year, I thought it would be a brilliant idea to get close to Cassie. After all, she's Alec's cousin from the Royal Ballet School, here to take on New York. She'd always said with her fake British accent, thinking it was cute. Not just a normal new girl who'd be easy to get rid of. But she was too good. And it got so hard to watch her come in and dance the parts I wanted. The parts I'd been training for at this school since I was 5. In April, I sat along the edges of Studio B, watching Cassie's paw run through for the spring ballet La Sylphide with Scott Bentecourt, a senior boy likely to be offered an apprenticeship with the company. My mother made sure I got to be there, probably after accusing Mr. Lucas and Mr. K of preferential treatment. She always knew how to throw her weight around in just the right ways. Scott labored when lifting Cassie over his head that day, because she was all clenched up, stomach muscles braced and flinching at his touch.
Let him hold you, Morky had yelled.
Cassie tried to adapt. She wasn't as pretty when she was worried. I tried not to smirk, fought with my lips to stay relaxed. I tried not to enjoy that she wasn't as good as the teachers always said. That I could have been cast, should have been cast. I liked seeing Cassandra's eyes get all big and watery with confusion and worry. Morky clapped her hands in an angry beat along to the music.
Ballet is woman,
she'd hollered, and continued to scold Cassie about letting Scott support her in the flying shoulder lift and hold her low in the hips because she was so tall.
He's trying to make you look beautiful, but you don't trust him.
Will slipped into the studio while Cassie and Scott resumed their battle to dance like soulmates. He'd sat down next to me with a huge smile on his face, and I knew he wanted me to ask. I'd thought about not giving in, but I needed to know what he was doing here.
Why are you in here? Mr. K says I get to understudy this paw.
The words tumbled out so fast, he was almost screaming them. When did that happen? You didn't tell me. He was supposed to be one of my best friends. I would expect a text at least, right after he found out.
2 days ago, he said. I didn't want to mess it up. Make sure it was for real first.
I'm so happy for you, I said, feeling a knot of jealousy tingle in my stomach. I glanced at the glass wall where Liz stood in the hall, glaring at Cassie, and thought through all of our midnight chats, where Liz, Eleanor, and I plotted to mess with her a little.
Is it all official, the casting?
Yep,
he said, pushing down into a deeper stretch.
Can't be taken away? Not a let's see how rehearsal goes thing in case you mess up?
I whispered, an idea storming through me.
Why?
He sat up, and I pulled him closer. We'd spent so much time curled up like this, with our secrets and gossip and machinations. I smoothed down a hair sticking up on his head. And I remembered what I loved about him the most. He was solid and thoughtful and certain. He would always help me.
Favor? I said, in just the right way. The way that always got him to do whatever I needed him to. You owe me for getting you out of that fiasco with your mom catching you with Ben. And that other time when you needed Vicodin and... He frowned and pushed a hand over my mouth, annoyed. Okay, okay. What? He said, a little pissed now. I bit his palm. Drop her, I'd whispered quickly, before I could lose my nerve. Just once, and not too hard. Just enough. His nose crinkled a little, so that I knew he was judging me. Injuries change cast lists, I'd said, sort of not believing what I was actually saying. Like I'd stepped into some alternate version of my life, where I could just do whatever I wanted. You owe me. Your mom even thinks we're dating. I still text with her, you know. The silence stretched between us so long, I thought he'd never say anything again. That I'd finally done it. Ruined us. But somehow, I kept that icy calm. That sheer force that the women in my family have, even though I was seething inside. He shouldn't have even hesitated. I patted his leg in just the right way. My way. Please? My hands were all shaky, and I gazed around for Morky and Victor. They hovered right beside the piano. Will started to speak. I railroaded through his response. Come on, you have to. I managed a smile to soften it. Alec always said I'm beautiful when I smile. Cassie rushed over and plopped down beside us before he could answer me. Will and I swallowed the entire conversation, and I felt lost, afloat, unsure of my footing. Cassie whined for a while about drinking and being off. I pretended to sympathize, but come on. She was the only sophomore level B girl to get a solo. I didn't feel bad for her at all. Then, Morky called them to the center. Will looked back at me, and for a minute, I wanted to tell him not to do it, and tell him I was sorry for bringing up his homophobic mother. But my mouth just hung open. I had to dance her part. I had to be like Adele, a ballet prodigy. And this could make it happen, make all my dreams come true. The moment Cassie fell out of Will's arms, I'd flashed her a smile that was so goddamn pretty she wouldn't ever forget who was on top, who she should thank, and who she should have been afraid of. The memory sends shivers down my spine. I'd had nightmares that evening, the kind that came with screams and flung blankets, in a desperation so deep, I woke Eleanor up. She'd brought me water and a cool washcloth, like I was her kid and not her friend. Even when I was hurt or sick or panicked, my mother never did that for me. Just having Eleanor in the room with me wasn't enough, though. I needed someone to share the responsibility. I needed to take off a tiny bit of the weight of what I'd done. I couldn't very well tell Alec. He was so good. So right all the time, and not to mention related to Cassie. He'd hate me. He'd never speak to me again. I couldn't bring it up with Will. He made it clear that our conversation never happened, that it had been an accident. So I told Eleanor, begged her to tell me it was okay, made her promise on her life, on her reputation at the school, that she wouldn't tell anyone else, ever. I had never been so honest with someone, but it seemed like the only way out of the guilt and panic. She hugged me and said she understood. I cried into Eleanor's pillow. Slept much more soundly in Eleanor's bed with her spooning me. We never spoke of it again. I waited every day for a month to get pulled into the office for what I did, but it never happened. The memory won't go away. Eleanor squeezes my hand and whispers, Henri doesn't know anything, Bet. And even if she's lying, it makes me feel a little better, like no one will ever find out. I let Eleanor take me back upstairs to our room, where I curl up with that memory and a white pill to try to erase it all.
Chapter 15. June. After rehearsal, we're all herded into the assembly room, which is an offshoot of the lobby. The room is full of skylight windows and reminds me of a solarium my mom took me to once. The whole night sky spreads above us, and I could find it pretty if I wasn't too busy fixating on Nurse Connie, Morky, and Mr. K. They whisper in front of us, exchanging glances that mean we're about to have a serious conversation. Around me, everyone rehashes rehearsal, but I can't. I want to know what they're about to say. It must be big, since they didn't let us go straight to the cafe for a snack, then homework, and then bed. They hate to disrupt our evening routine. Maybe a casting change? I don't like surprises. Gigi plops down next to me. She's twitchy and agitated, and I wonder if she's discovered her medical report in the light yet. If she knows I took it and just isn't saying anything. That was sloppy of me. The last time I checked the closet, it wasn't there anymore. Someone took it down. I gaze at her chest and wonder how her heart could be so messed up and it not show. I didn't really understand the terms, but looking at the EKG, it was pretty obvious that something's really wrong with her. And I sort of feel a little bad for a second. Just one.
Why are we meeting?
She asks, pulling her wild hair from its bun and surrounding me with the scent of the greasy crap she puts in it. Coconut oil, I think. It makes my empty stomach heave. I shrug in reply, not actually wanting to talk to her. I turn my attention back to the front, back to Mr. K. The Korean girls sidle past us. Seijin pauses right above me.
Oh, don't play coy, Jun. Don't ignore your roomie.
She winks at Gigi like they're old friends.
You know exactly why we're meeting.
Go away, Seijin, I say, not acknowledging her presence with eye contact.
It's ballerinas like you that make them waste all of our time, she adds before plopping down not too far off.
I squirm at her taunt. Mr. K claps, three hard ones, his signature.
Please, heed the seriousness of what we're going to say tonight. It is of the utmost importance. You are dancers. Your bodies are your instruments. They are sacred and must be cared for as such, and I will not hesitate in making the necessary changes if you fail to do so. And I have. Liz is gone.
Everyone looks around for her, like he's lying. I watch Bet put a hand over her mouth, like even she didn't know.
She will not be returning, and we will be selecting someone to dance her role. Arabian coffee. We want to see who can rise to the occasion, and we are considering shuffling some people around.
And adding the Harlequin doll to the cast list, just as we did last year. So don't get too comfortable in your part.
Gripes and mumbles explode through the room. He waves his hand in the air to silence everyone.
The moment you think you're on top is the moment you've lost your passion. Might as well retire.
Then he puts his arm out to Nurse Connie, who steps forward. My stomach gripes. I bite my lips and scratch at my tights. This can't be good.
We would like to make a few announcements regarding health before opening night of the Nutcracker, Nurse Connie says. Her voice doesn't have the lovely depth of Mr. K's, so the sound is anemic in comparison. 40 ballerinas groan and lose interest.
We all know this, of course, but I'd like to reiterate that the rule still stands. If you fall underweight, you will be sent home. No questions asked. No excuses made. Underweight dancers will not be tolerated, even very talented ballerinas, as I'm sure you can all see.
I prefer Mr. K's straightforward address to Nurse Connie's pointedly vague one. Still, what she is going for works. My stomach drops a little. I start to sweat behind my ears. Liz is gone, and it could have been me. I was close again last week to falling under. I can feel Nurse Connie's eyes fixed only on me.
I brought along my trusty food pyramid poster, she continues, and I can't help it.
I sigh. Even with her eyes right on me, gauging my response, I can't muster up the appropriate, thoughtful, curious expression. Not again. Nurse Connie and Morky exchange another pained look, and Nurse Connie goes on to talk us through the food pyramid herself. She also has posters for BMI and height-to-weight ratio and the evils of laxatives and diet teas. She describes what happens to girls who starve themselves, the loss of hair and bone density, peach fuzz on cheeks, kidney failure, tooth decay. The consequences crash around in my head like train wrecks and car accidents. I focus on my hands, blocking it all out. Morky just stands there with her arms crossed over her chest, neither endorsing nor disagreeing. I always get the feeling Morky and Nurse Connie are in a silent battle with each other over our bodies. Over my body. And every time, Morky wins. Ballet is most important. What the Russians want, beautiful dancers, trumps everything. Unless you go too far like Liz. Unless you get out of control. I tune it out. Gigi does not. She is scratching away at a pad of paper taking notes. Notes! A little bit of pink tongue peeks out of her mouth as she scribbles, and I decide that I don't just find her annoying, I actually hate her. All the nice moments we've had, the times where I thought we might be able to be friends, are gone. Each one of her pen strokes echoes, making me flinch. It must be half an hour before Nurse Connie packs up her posters and finishes handing out pamphlets. She looks each of us in the eye when she gives us a little packet of insane brochures she's brought for us. I do not imagine it when she lingers next to me.
Please look these over, June, she says in a fake whisper.
If she were a real nurse, she wouldn't accuse me in public like that. There has to be some law against that.
You still have some work to do.
She pats me on the shoulder. I count to 20. She waits for me to look up, like she won't move unless I do. My makeup runs a little, and I give in and look up so she can see my eyes and move on. I fly out of there, ignoring Gigi's questions about whether I'm headed back to the room or not. I dash into the closest studio to get my head together. I can't let anyone see me like this. They might think Nurse Connie's speech had something to do with me. I have to keep it together. I have to make them see that if they're going to give out a role or ship things around, then they should move me. I rest my leg on the bar, stretching deep as I breathe in and out until the tinges in my muscles disappear. I think about Liz standing on those scales, about the number that flashed. It had to be super small. And I fight the urge to want to be as small. I wonder how long it took her to pack her things. If she goes to another dance school, she'll have to tell them what happened. They'll call Mr. K, and she might never get to dance again. This kind of thing haunts you. I shudder. I hear Seijin and the other girls giggle as they shift past the studio's glass walls and open door. Their conversation drifts in.
I need to hurry up and shower. Jaehee's almost here. He's gonna kill me for being late.
Seijin says loud enough for everyone to hear. Typical. I hear the other girls fawning over her and her big plans. On a weeknight, no less. This impresses them. They follow her mindlessly, like little ducks in a row, gasping about his hair and his perfect teeth and how strong he is, despite not being a dancer. Idiots. I used to be jealous of her after she started dating Jaehee. And I'm sure she knew it. She paraded him through the school. But really, I knew she was putting on a show. I knew I had the power to blow her perfect little life to smithereens. I just chose not to. Because of the friendship we had once. Because of what we used to be. Chinjer. Best friends. Once they're gone, I take the elevator down to the basement and to the place where Seijin always meets Jaehee, to sneak him into the building. Past the rec room is a weight room that has a side door that leads out to the school dumpsters, a service staircase, and an emergency exit with a broken alarm. That's where he'll be waiting. All of eighth grade, it used to be just she and I waiting for him, peeping out into the dark for his head to appear. She used to tell me how she didn't really like him at first, and how she was just dating him because her mother wanted her to. She also used to date one of the white boys, Shane, who graduated last year. Jaehee never knew about that. I guess she loves him now. Maybe. I perch near the windows, waiting to see him. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say, and this whole sabotage plan is starting to feel half-baked. I should have plotted it out. I'm too shaky. But this opportunity couldn't be better. Before I can rehearse the conversation in my head, I see a shadow in the dark and then his face. His hair is shaggy and black, and the black-rimmed glasses he always wears drift down his nose. A rush of heat hits me. I remember how it felt to like him. He spots me in the window and scrunches his nose up, like he's confused. I open the door for him.
"Hey,"
I say. "Hey," he says, sliding past me, careful so we don't touch. "What are you doing down here? Where's Sajin?"
"She's still upstairs," I say. "We had a late meeting after rehearsal."
"Oh," is all he says, shifting back and forth from one foot to the other.
"I was down here lifting weights," I lie. He laughs.
"Seriously? What can you bench?" he jokes, his voice husky and teasing. It sends an unexpected shiver up my spine. He's being weirdly nice. "I bet you can't even lift 50 pounds," he says, a grin spreading across his face. "I bet you only weigh 50 pounds. His words hit, and for some reason I can't control the tears that pour down my cheeks and the sob that escapes my mouth. I can't remember the last time I cried, and the thought of that makes me cry even more. This is not part of the plan.
"I'm sorry, June. I was just..."
He pulls me into a hug, his body warm and strong. For some reason, this catches me off guard. I bury my face in his hoodie, let the spicy scent of his cologne mellow the shakiness out of me. He keeps apologizing and trying to get me to calm down, but I stay there. He asks me if he should go get someone or call my mom. I don't answer. So then he just stops talking, strokes my hair, and squeezes his arms tight around me, as if he's done it 1,000 times before. So tight, I think I could disappear. He somehow takes the sharpness out of me. I look up at him, even though I know my makeup's a mess and I'm a mess. I want to ask him, "Why did you disappear? Why did you choose her over me? Weren't we friends? Did you believe the things she told you about me?"
"My Harmony asks about you all the time," he says, mimicking her soft accent.
"Where's that little girl with the too light hair?"
She would always say my hair was unusually light for a Korean, a pale ashy brown. I didn't have the heart to tell her that my dad was white. He doesn't answer any of the questions swirling through my head, but he makes me smile. We laugh and I hiccup. He wipes a tear from my cheek, and I feel like I'm that little girl in his basement again.
"Ballet makes you all so sad. You never used to be like this."
"How was I?" I ask. "How did I used to be?"
"Right," he says,
which is a strange word, but it feels right. Before he can clarify, I lean up and kiss him. My first kiss with a boy. Quick and urgent, like he might disappear altogether, like he might fall out of my grasp again. But he doesn't. His mouth is warm and tastes like a cinnamon stick. He doesn't push me away or pull me close, but I feel his mouth press into mine a little. And I know he's just kissed me back.
Chapter 16 Gigi. Saturday morning, light flickers through the window, and in response, my butterflies flap their wings, their tiny shadows flitting across the windowsill. I remember when my dad brought home my very first terrarium. "They're for good luck," he said, placing the glass box in my bedroom window with his big brown hands. I was 8, and on bed rest for exhaustion, spending days and nights in my nightgown, gazing at the trolleys chugging past my window on the tracks. Why do I need luck? I'd press my nose close to the terrarium, wondering if I could train them to perch in my hair using my curls as twigs. Everybody needs a little. He adjusted the container while I watched the monarchs flutter around inside. "Some people believe butterflies are the souls of the dead, those who have come back to us." I gawked at those tiny creatures and their round eyes, wondering if one was Granny or my third grade teacher, Mrs. Charlotte. I wondered if that's what people became after death. Even now, I'm thinking of Cassie, who of course I never knew, and who isn't dead, but maybe in a place that's worse, being unable to dance. I thumped the glass and greet the 12 little ones who came across the country with me. I pull 2 flowers from the congratulatory bouquet Mama and Dad sent me after I finally told them about landing the sugar plum fairy roll, and place them inside the cage. The monarchs tickle my arm and land on the petals, ready to sip their nectar. "Okay, little ones," I say to them, then realize June's still in bed. Across the room, I hear her gentle breathing. I'm shocked she's still asleep. Not like June at all. She's usually up and in the studio before me. She doesn't believe in sleeping on weekends, and I've gotten used to having weekend mornings to myself in the room. I check my phone. A tiny hope floats up when I tap on the screen. Maybe there'll be a text from Alec, I sigh. He's broken up with Bet, but I don't know what that means for us. We've texted a lot and practiced our paw, but nothing else really. There's only one message from Aunt Leah. "Doctor's appointment at 9:30. Your mom scheduled it. Sorry. Coming at 8:30. I set the phone back, disappointed. On my desk, there's a baggie of tiny origami turkeys with funny facial expressions. I look up at the calendar on my wall. You can lose track of the days here. Your focus singular and intense. Thanksgiving is next week. Who left this? I quietly rummage some more, searching for a note or message. "It's from Alec," June whispers. I flinch and don't turn around. She hates being woken up. "Sorry," I whisper quickly, but she rolls over without a response. I clamp my hand over my mouth to hold back my smile. I touch the tiny turkeys, running my fingers along each crease and fold. I wish I could share this with her. When I first got here, I wanted to be her friend so bad, but she didn't say more than 2 words to me. She opens and closes like a morning glory, and lately, she's been closed up tight, not wanting to grab meals together or rehearse. I leave the room. I shower, unable to stop thinking about Alec. I run my fingers over my lips, remembering our kiss in the light closet. The thought of his kisses gets my heart pounding, but it feels good. I don't try to calm it down. I don't try to control my breathing. I close my eyes as water hits my shoulder blades and wonder what it would be like for his lips to find that same spot. I've never wanted any boy before. Not really, and definitely not someone as dangerous to want as Alec. The feeling is so strong this morning. I worry that I won't be able to keep zipping it in. It has breath and life of its own. Besides, I don't know that I want to stop it. At home, guys tried to hang out with me. Redheaded Robert, who came to all my birthday parties despite being the only boy there. Skater boy Noah, who asked me to the 8th grade dance. And Jamal, who left love notes in my locker all through 10th grade. But I never paid any attention to them, running off to my dance classes and private lessons. But Alec makes me pay attention to him, even though I know I should worry about Bet's reaction. I go to the RA office on the 4th floor, where I'll wait for Aunt Leah, though I'm sure she'll be late, like always. Will is sprawled out on the far couch with an ice pack on his knee. What happened to you? I ask. He doesn't open his eyes at first, so I repeat my question. Then he turns his head and says, prevention. He adjusts the ice. I ice every day regarding of injury to keep inflammation down. His voice is sharp and moody. Oh, is all I can manage to say. No wonder he is such a flawless dancer. I'm surprised you're up, I say to fill the quiet. Why? I'm always up early. Will mumbles. He's Alec's best friend, and that's all I know about him. And despite the fact that he is amazing in rehearsal, Mr. K never looks pleased with him. Where are you going anyway? He adds, sizing up my jeans, sweater, and coat. I flush and for a second ponder telling him the truth, but that would be stupid. Brunch, with my aunt. It's not a lie, really. We actually will probably get brunch after my doctor's appointment. Do all the boys get up this early on Saturday? I try, in the hopes that he'll mention something about Alec. And if he's up too. He smiles in that preparatory way that will surely lead to a juicy story or some information. You like him, don't you? He asks. Like who? I say, knowing full well he means Alec. But Will is not exactly my friend, and I'm not exactly sure if it's safe to say anything at all to anyone. Don't pretend now, he says. He tells me everything. I blush and look away. So, do you like him? Maybe, I finally say. You're not like Bet, so I like you. I could get to like you and him together. He shifts the ice pack around on his knee and plays with his hair. June calls him Carrot Top in private. Yeah, maybe the two of you won't be so bad. Okay, I say, not sure how to respond to that. That's a bitch, you know. She's, like, empty. Seriously empty. And you know she's the one who wrote that message on the mirror. I'd recognize that two pink Chanel lipstick anywhere. She can't get enough of it. She thinks it's so cute. Really? I say, even though I know it was her. Be honest. Come on. You can tell me. You know you think it was her. We all know. Will is trying to look concerned, but he isn't hiding his eager smile. It's her signature, trust me. Any and all pranks lead back to her. The confirmation makes sense, and it gets me wondering. If she wrote the message on the mirror, then she must have left the picture of Henri and me and my stolen medical report in the light closet. I ponder confronting her. Why does she act like that? I can't even say that it's because Beth's so damaged, or blame it on her messed up family. The one thing about this place, he looks all around, ready to share his secret, is that it brings out the worst shit in all of us. Even I've done stuff I'm not proud of. He moves the ice pack to his other knee. Maybe it's ballet, I don't know. There's only room for one star, and everybody else doesn't matter. They blend into the background like stage ornaments. Bet has always been that star here, set up by her sister, a legacy, a done deal. Well, until you came around. I like it. You're different. There's that word again. Because I'm black? I straight out ask, hating that being different can be a code word for being black, for something that isn't white. No, he shakes his head and adds a laugh. Because you're not the type to take someone down just to be on top. Your dancing is, like, that good. You don't need to. Not desperate. Not Bet. Then why does everybody love her? I ask. Even Alec. He releases the longest sigh I've ever heard. They've been together forever. Since we came here. I've been stuck with them as a couple since I was six. I imagine Bet and Alec as 6 years old, blonde and little and perfect for each other, and my stomach twists. I don't want to compete with her in another arena. It's already too much in the studio and on stage. I'm being so stupid. He and I don't match. I should stop this crush. Stay focused. Will talks more about them as kids, I picture Mama's wall of photos of me. Fuzzy curls, brown skin, sun-kissed cheeks, little hippie dresses caked with mud and sand, and Mama's paint all over my hands. I'm not the girl who's supposed to be with him. I don't look like I fit perfectly by his side. Like Bet, Alec and I are mismatched puzzle pieces. I know he thinks the world of you, Gigi. He's working his face into gentle kindness, but he's bitter and pleased right under the surface. His eyes are bright, and the edges of his mouth keep twitching up. "What's it all like?" he asks. "What's what like?" I look at him again, confused. "Having him like you," he says. I don't have an answer. I don't understand the look on his face. I try to say something. Nothing but a weird mutter comes out. The phone at the desk rings, and Ari comes down the hall and grabs it from the desk. "Gigi, your aunt is coming up," she says. "Just be careful here. Careful with Alec. Careful with everybody," he says, then leaves me sitting there, head buzzing with all his revelations and the echo of a warning. Along with the trail of his too flowery cologne, a chill settles into my stomach. Aunt Leah appears in an elevator. "You ready, kid?" She hugs me, squeezing my arms, rocking back and forth, like always. Her hair smells like Mama's curls, full of shea butter and citrus. In this moment, I miss home and Sunday morning breakfast, the smell of my dad's coffee, and listening to him read the paper to my mother while she sketches. Aunt Leah signs me out, and we walk to the subway. She holds my hand, just the way she did when I was a little girl, and I let her. Her hand looks just like Mama's, thin brown fingers and two freckles in one of her smooth, round nail beds. I can smell the park and wish we could go there instead of to Mama's doctor friend, who agreed to examine me on a Saturday. Mother's push strollers. The smell of roasted chestnuts wafts from the vendors as we neared the subway entrance. We enter the station. Aunt Leah squeezes my hand to get my attention. "Lost in a daydream? You're quiet today. Too quiet. How's school? Ballet? Boys?" She swipes me through the turnstile, and we wait on the platform for the next train. "Are there even any straight boys?" I laugh. "Of course," I say. "That's a stereotype." I think of Alec and Henri, how they're pushed by Mr. K to exude that extreme Russian masculinity. And I think about Will and the flack he gets for being gay. The fact that he might never dance the lead role, not at the conservatory, no matter how good he is. I worry that maybe some people would say the same about me. "And how are you feeling these days? You know, in class, after intense exercise?" "Fine. Normal." I keep my answer short. I hear the worry in her question. My parents calm me enough with their anxieties. "I'm fine," I say as the subway train approaches. The noise drowns out her follow-up questions. We travel down to Times Square. People zoom by and fill the streets and sidewalks. I get bumped from the left and right, trying to stay in step with Aunt Leah. Billboards blaze with thousands of lights. I gawk at the Broadway theater signs. I still haven't seen a show. I haven't seen much of the city, in fact. Just the area surrounding school and Aunt Leah's Brooklyn apartment. She keeps asking me to do things with her, to explore, but class and rehearsals keep me busy. And Alec too, of course. But she doesn't know that. I follow her through the throng of people. Men and women hold out goods for me to buy, and others ask for change. The crowd has a frenetic pulse, and the tide pushes us both into the heart of Times Square. We turn off Broadway. When we approach the doctor's office, I can already see the machines, feel the cold chest goop, the iodine making its way through my veins. My palms start to sweat and my heart races. This is my first doctor's appointment since I left California in August, and that was just a checkup before leaving for the conservatory. "It'll be over before you know it," Aunt Leah says, patting my back. "I promise." Once we're inside, I block out everything, Your aunt will wait outside the door while you change into the paper gown, the nurse says. Then Dr. Khanna will be right in to see you. She pulls the crinkly paper garment out of the drawer, laying it on the examination table. I cringe at the sight of it. It doesn't cover a thing. Make sure the open part faces front, she reminds me, then closes the door. After I've undressed, the doctor comes in, and then Aunt Leah. You want me in here, love? She asks. I nod. She takes a seat along the perimeter of the room. Hello, Giselle. I'm Dr. Khanna, the man in the white coat says. He rubs his thick black beard. I bunch my top clothes before shaking his hand. Nice to meet you, he says, while warming up his stethoscope. So you're a ballerina? Yeah, I answer. He motions for me to uncross my arms so he can listen to my heart. May I? I clamp them to my sides so the paper top doesn't open. He places the cold stethoscope against my skin. Your heartbeat is accelerating. Are you nervous? I nod. There is no need to be. You must have had these exams a million times. He pats my shoulder. I've had one every 6 months since I was born. Please relax. He grabs the tube of goop from the counter. I smell the latex as he nears. He squeezes out a dollop. You're going to have to open your gown a bit more. My cheeks flame. I look at the ceiling and let my arms drop. The gown top opens, and I feel the cool air on my breast. He spreads the goop on the top of my chest. Whenever he comes too close to my breast, my stomach clenches. Then he places electrodes. They look like mini suction cups on my chest. He pushes buttons on the machine beside the examination table. The screen lights up like a computer, and I can see my heartbeats flash in peaks and valleys. Numbers flash, and the machine makes a squishy sound, a whooshing that reminds me of a San Francisco breeze, only electrified. The doctor makes small talk about ballet and the last show he's seen, Swan Lake, but I hear nothing but the machine's whooshes. I try to stay calm, so I don't get in trouble. If my heartbeat is too irregular, he'll say I can't dance, that my heart is having trouble, that it's too much of a risk, that it's too dangerous. I hear my dad's deep voice. Bean, you have to be careful. You're not like everyone else, and that can be good and bad. I was diagnosed as a baby, had surgery, but didn't really understand it all until I was 4 years old and trying out dance for the first time. My parents enrolled me in all the classes, jazz, tap, and ballet, but in a particularly jubilant tap class, where we ran around clicking and stomping our metal-clad feet on the ground, I turned red and fell to the ground. The teachers didn't think anything of it, just gave me a glass of water and told me to sit the next one out. But they let my parents know I was all worn out when they came to pick me up. I remember Mama scooping me right up and taking me straight to the hospital, not even waiting for my dad to follow or get in the car. He had to take a taxi to meet us there. I read Highlights magazine for hours and wailed when the doctors put Cool Meadow tools against my skin. It seems like a long time ago, but I'm the same little girl right now. Dr. Khanna clicks a button. I can't hear my heart anymore. Okay, all done. Good job, Giselle. You can get dressed and come to my office where I'll print out your EKG results. He lets me get dressed alone, and when I go to his office, he's all business, and I'm myself again, covered up and calm. Well, Giselle, I don't think I need to remind you that your ventricular septal defect is quite serious if not watched, the doctor begins. I don't know why he doesn't just call it what it is. The hole in my heart is bad. Today, your heart shows a bit of distress, so I recommend you lessen your stress levels and decrease strenuous activities. I have to dance, I say. Approximately, how many hours a day do you dance? I run through all the hours in my head, morning ballet, character and repertoire, and rehearsal. About 6 hours. After my answer comes out, and I see the look on their faces, I know I should have lied. Well, he pauses. It's quite unusual for someone with your condition to be as athletic as you are. It's almost dangerous, Miss Stewart. You should be checking in with a nurse after each block of dancing. He shakes his head. 6 hours. He hands me the EKG report, telling me to give it to the nurse at school for my file. I fold it and put it in my pocket, planning to do just the opposite. Someone is nosing around in her office. Someone has looked in my file. Nothing is safe. But I'm not leaping and jumping the whole time. Sometimes we're just at the bar or stretching, I say. Still, that being said, you need to make sure you are being careful. With you doing so much exercise on a daily basis, even when you're not, you could still have a palpitation. It's risky behavior for someone with your condition. He gets up and walks to his shelf. I'd like you to wear a heart monitor. He flashes a small device that reminds me of Dad's stopwatch. I don't want to wear it, I blurt out. GG, Aunt Leah starts, her face full of shock and disappointment at my outburst. If the doctor says you have to, then you do, she addresses Dr. Khanna. I know her parents will fully be behind this. I'm afraid she really needs to, Dr. Khanna says, setting the monitor. Just to be safe. He pushes buttons and I hear a chirp. He explains how to turn it on and off, and he attaches it to my wrist. My attention wavers in and out as I think of wearing this around my wrist, having to explain it to Morky, having to make sure it doesn't beep during class. I fight angry tears as we leave the office, my new monitor firmly in place around my wrist. Aunt Leah and I don't speak the whole trip home, and when we get to the dorms, I give her the smallest pinch of a kiss on the cheek and then practically sprint to my room. I faceplant on the bed, feeling the monitor press into my wrist, and stare at my little butterflies for a while. Glad June's out for the moment. I can't trust anyone with this. I won't be different from the others. I won't let it be the next thing that makes me stick out. Black girl with a heart monitor. Black girl who has to be careful. Black girl who shouldn't be a dancer. I get up, take off the monitor, and tuck it into my desk drawer, where no one will ever find it, where I can forget it even exists.